Hello, this is Thompson Smiley again with radio comments, if you like, on my monthly column, Smiley's Picks in the Louisville Magazine. One of the chapters, if that's right, one of the paragraphs this month is called In Praise of Journalistic Integrity, though my editor made an editorial correction at the end and said it should have been called In Praise of Full Disclosure, because it seems to me the most interesting, I truly mean unique, arts event in Louisville's musical life for the month of February is happening this week, Thursday and Saturday, at St. Francis in the Fields Church at the junction of 42 and Wolfpen. And my guest is Jim Reitmeier, who is the highly acclaimed music master of that church, but in addition is the artistic director of the Choral Arts Society. And I'd like to say, first of all, that this spectacle, which you're presenting on Thursday and Saturday, is stage directed by me, hence the need for In Praise of Full Disclosure. So, Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Tell me something about the Choral Arts Society. It's been going for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, this is its 15th season. I formed the group in 1995 with a mission at that time of performing choral and orchestral masterworks primarily of the 20th century.
Did you really? That's very bold of you.
Well, just as I am fortunate enough to be able to follow my bliss, and this is an area of great interest to me. I just love the music of the 20th century. And as I say, that was its principal mission for a number of years. In more recent seasons, I've branched out to explore great choral music of many generations. Mm-hmm. And last fall, we performed the Monteverdi Vespers of 1610. And in recent seasons, we've performed the great masterworks of Bach, the B minor Mass, mm-hmm. and the St. Matthew Passion.
Yes. That's an extraordinary range of repertoire. But then choral singing is one of the oldest forms of musical making that we know about. I mean, going right back to the Greeks, isn't it?
Absolutely. And just so personal and so alive with it reaches the soul.
Why do you say personal?
Well, I guess I say that because I am fortunate enough to be able to choose music that touches me and moves me. I'm not given a script. I don't have to perform anything. In fact, I don't perform anything that I'm not absolutely enraptured with and feel personally it touches my inner core.
Yes.
And I choose repertoire on that basis alone.
Lucky man.
I am very fortunate.
So that pretty much answers my next question. Was it your idea? It was your idea, wasn't it, to do Burning Fiery Furnace?
It was, and I'll give you a little history to that. You may or may not know, I am on a mission to perform all of Britain's choral works.
I didn't know that.
In my career, this is my goal, and I've made great strides. I've performed many of the Britain masterworks. This particular work, which is not technically a choral work, but does have a chorus, and because it's Britain, it's of great interest to me. And it just so happens that the Choral Arts Society was the recipient of a very nice grant this past year, and it gave us the resources to be able to produce this opera. Otherwise, we don't usually have the budget to do such a thing. But once I was aware that we had this nice grant, I said, by all means, let's go for it.
Well, as you know, I share your enthusiasm more than that, your passion for Benjamin Britten. And the older I get, the older he gets, because if he were alive, he'd be 102 years' time,
right.
Born 1913. The older I get, the more I realize I think he's the most successful composer of the 20th century.
Yeah.
He's also the greatest opera composer of the 20th century and a man who really became a multimillionaire almost exclusively by writing opera. I mean, Stravinsky wrote a lot of music. He also wrote an opera. Beethoven wrote a lot of music, wrote one opera. But the major part of Britain's output is either opera or vocal of some sort.
Right.
And there's a ton of it, isn't there?
Yes, there's quite a lot.
Even the non-operatic choral works. He wasn't actually devout himself, I think. According to Peter Pears, he wasn't a churchgoer.
No.
And identified, I think, with Christ, but not with Christianity. And,
right.
And yet he wrote some of the most moving and beautiful,
spectacular music for the church.
Yes. I think he wrote spectacular music for the opera house.
Yes.
And when I said the most successful composer of the 20th century, I was talking as much durability. You know, pieces like Peter Grimes,
yes.
The Turn of the Screw, Albert Herring, have really entered the international repertoire.
They have
performed all over Europe and that sort of stuff. And that's not true of any other composer I know.
That's right.
The other thing is most composers, when they die, don't they, their reputation dies with them, and then it may be revived 25 years later if they're lucky. But that's never happened to Britten, has it?
Not at all. He's very much, very much in the forefront, being performed all the time.
I must say, working with your group, one of the very special highlights has been working with boy trebles. There are five unbroken boys' voices, which, of course, you can rarely hear in opera because the story is that they don't make much sound, but these boys can really belt it out.
They certainly can, mm-hmm. and they are a real joy to work with. Of course, Britten recognized that. Many of his works utilize treble voices, unchanged voices for especially boys, and it is one of my great joys to work with these boys and other trebles at St. Francis in the Fields. Mm-hmm. I have found over the years that the children are limited in their ability only by what we ask of them. They are so incredibly talented and gifted.
And intelligent, aren't
they? And intelligent, they are.
I mean, if I've got a problem in how to stage some tricky moment, one of them will crop up and say, well, why don't you try such and such? And that's the problem solved. That's unique.
Yes, I mean, and they're totally engaged.
And I guess Louisville's very lucky because we have this, I suppose one might call it the Anglican tradition of training boys to sing, but
right.
There aren't many churches, are there, that have this this tradition of the boy's voice. It's very interesting because there is an extraordinary ethereal quality to it. Well, why don't you just use women? They're more available, you know. But there is an extraordinary ethereal, otherworldly quality.
There is. It's a unique sound. Boys' voices, unchanged voices. You just said it. It's unearthly. Unearthly. It's just incredibly beautiful.
And yet carry with great power.
Yes.
I was amazed listening to one of your musical rehearsals and there are about 13 people on stage belting it out, and these five boys, and the five boys just soar effortlessly.
Right above the entire ensemble.
Over the sun. The whole question of Britten and boys, of course, has had its controversial aspects during his life and since, but I think a lot of people miss the main point, that Britten had a very happy, conventional, middle-class childhood with lots of music and loving parents and living by the seaside. And then he, as we all have to do, entered into this big and wicked world of ours. And a lot of his work is concerned with the loss of innocence,
yes,
is it not?
Yes, it is.
Including this one.
Absolutely.
Yes, and you know, the boy who dies in Peter Grimes, the fate of Miles in The Turn of the Screw. It's really a parable for the inversion of the doctrine of original sin. I mean, it's as if he believes we were born perfect and the world corrupts us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's do some publicity. Tell me the dates again, as if I don't know.
This Thursday, February the 3rd, and Saturday, February the 5th. 8 p.m. at St. Francis in the Fields Episcopal Church.
And is there a number to call?
Yes, there is. 228-1176.
228-1176. Well, I better call that because I don't have tickets for Thursday night, but I'm sure I'll be allowed in. Let me just say a little about, because I had the good fortune to go to what used to be called the Far East and is now called Asia last year, and I heard some of the Balinese music, the gamelan music in Bali, which Britten also heard on this 1956 tour he made of the Far East, and I've been exposed quite a lot to no theatre. It's hard to believe, but there's actually a Japanese, a no master in residence at the University of Kentucky. The resources of this fair state never cease to dazzle me. And Britten was immensely struck, was he not, by the simplicity and sparseness of resources.
Yes, and utilize them. This is you opened this segment by talking about the uniqueness of this particular work, The Burning Fiery Furnace. It is absolutely unique. Well, he wrote three works in this style, utilizing the elements of Japanese no theater and the gamelan music, and merging that with Western opera style, and yet a third area of medieval mystery plays in the church.
Yes.
So the combination of all three of these aspects present a work which is truly unique. It is, as you say, a sparse work. For instance, instrumentally, there are only eight members of the orchestra, but they provide an incredible sound. And the music itself is quite an amalgamation of East and West music.
Yes, it is, isn't it? And, you know, the word words modern opera usually scare most people off, but I think this is a good chance to revisit that
Absolutely.
That phobia, if you like. There's another one the week after when they do Nixon in China. They
met the Met relays.
I have to say, as stage director, I was a little daunted by this idea of importing wholesale the no gestures and the economy and artists wearing masks and not allowed to express themselves. I've kind of de-emphasized that, you may have noticed, because it's a very good story.
It's a wonderful story.
It needs to be told with as much vim and vigor as we can give it. And you know, my wife was saying this morning how deeply moving the opening and the closing are with the choir processing in, the company rather.
The whole company, including the instrumentalist.
Yes, that's extraordinary. Yeah. Yeah. And carrying candles, if they're not carrying an instrument. And they bring the light into the church. And we see the show by candlelight with a little help from LED expensive instruments. And then they take the light out. So it's, I think, a theatrical experience as much as a musical one.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. We look forward very much to working with you. And I think we both heartily endorse our... Are we allowed to?
Yes,
In praise of full disclosure. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Thompson Smiley with another in the series where I take my Louisville Magazine column, Smiley's Picks, and go out on the radio. I'm rather perversely starting today with an event which is not featured in the February issue of Louisville Magazine and Smiley's Picks, because I didn't know about it at the time I was writing the column, which is as good an excuse as any. Much of the art focus, the visual art focus for the month of February, of course, is on the Speed Museum with the acquisition of its brand new old master, Sisley. But there's another art event which I think is drawing a lot of attention, and the curator for that is Roanne Victor, who's my guest today. And this is the 17th annual African-American Art Exhibition at Actors Theatre. Roanne, tell us something about that.
Well, it's very exciting because it's turned out to be one of the few black African-American art exhibits in the United States. In the beginning, there were many everywhere. And this, we are one of the few sustaining ones. We have this year 21 artists from the United States and one from Canada. They are from 10 different states, and the work is, as Kirsty, our PR person, has written, an exuberant exhibit of African-American work, and that's exactly what it is. It's terrific. There are many Louisvillians that are in the show at this time. There is Bud Dorsey and Samuel Williams, Barbara Tyson Mosley, and Akram Burton, who are all local people and very much involved in the art scene in Louisville.
And you're very much involved yourself. You've been curating this for all 17
years. All 17 years, and I've been with Actors Theatre since before the first play.
Have you really?
I have. Since 1963.
A lifetime, more or less a lifetime,
yes.
Lifetime involvement. I shouldn't really ask how you got involved, because imagine John Jury...
Oh, no, it was before John Jory.
Was it really?
Yes.
I meant with the African-American exhibition.
Oh, with the African... No, yes, it was with John.
Yes.
Yes.
What is your role as curator?
Well, I send out announcements. I don't personally send out announcements. The theater sends out announcements of the show, and anybody who's interested in joining next year can just send an inquiry to Actors Theater for information and ask to be put on the mailing list for the African American Art Show, and we'll be more than happy to do it. It's www.actorstheatre.org. And we'd look forward to any possible entries that we get.
Of course, it's running just now, isn't it?
Running right now. It opened February 4th, and it runs through the 15th.
Opened January 4th and runs
through the
13th of...
February 4th is an important date because that's the gallery hop this coming Friday,
yep.
And we have an open house. Everybody is welcome, and it's a great party. Most of the artists will be there, so you'll have the opportunity to meet them. And to add to the fun, we will have a little music and also complimentary appetizers from Mayan Cafe.
Well, any excuse to eat Mayan Cafe.
That's right.
Food
is a good one.
Is a good one.
Yes.
So do you do the actual selecting?
No, I don't. We have a juror by the name of Kevin Cole, who is from Atlanta, and he's becoming quite a famous artist in the African-American genre. He is a school teacher. Mm-hmm. He believes in education for artists other than just art education. He believes that you should know history, you should know business, mm-hmm. you should know lots of things, because the more you know, the better organized you are and the better artist you become and the stronger you are in your ability to sell your work and yourself.
How important is the market in this? I mean, do these artists expect to sell at this
exhibition? I've already sold three pieces.
Good.
In this show.
Yeah. And in addition, sorry to talk money, but all artists do, don't they? I mean, there's prize money.
Oh, yes. There's $4,500 in prize money this year.
And does that go to one person? Or
Oh, no. It's broken up into various amounts of money. The money is raised strictly from our board at Actors Theater, who are very interested in this show. And there is a $3,000 purchase award given by Brown-Forman.
Of course. Who else?
That's right. They've been our support since the first year.
Mm-hmm. And this has run every year for 17 years. And
yes.
You've done it
I've done every one of them, yes.
Every single
I'm kind
year.
Of stuck there.
What are the plans for the future? Do you have any plans to expand it, or is it...
Well, no, I don't think we can expand it. But I run the whole gallery at every play, and I try to match exhibits to the subject or affinity, depending on what the play is.
That must be a challenge.
Well, it is, and it doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. But I have wonderful shows. I have the first showing of the Kentucky Watercolor Society show, which toured the state until this year. It got too expensive to do this year. So probably maybe next year it will begin again. That's the only repeating show every year. And I try to use as much as possible local artists, because after all, we like to support our own.
Yes, but it's not exclusively.
No,
they come from
Well, this show, they come from all over. We have one from Ontario, as I said, mm-hmm. and the rest from the 10 or 11 states. I forget.
And you talk about as many as 20,000 people attending the African American exhibition.
Well, yes, they do.
Yes, that's extraordinary. How do you get the word out?
Well, we have postcards, we have this opening, and we have a fabulous catalog. So if you come to the show, please be sure that you get a copy of the catalog.
And it's all free, isn't it?
It's all free, yes.
Yes, yes, it's extraordinary. Is this in connection with Black History Month, or is it just a coincidence?
Well, it started out as Black History Month, and then we moved it to another part of the year to give it more importance. And now it just fits in perfectly because we've been doing a series of August Wilson plays,
yes.
And we've got a fabulous one going right now called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and it is the best ensemble acting we've had at the theater in many years, and it's terrific.
Well, you go back, as do I, many, I don't go back as many decades as you in our experience of Actors Theater, but it does seem to me it's on something of a roll at the moment. I really do think that...
This has been a terrific season.
It has indeed, and there's still more to come. But I think generally the company has never been better. It's different, but it's never
different,
been...
but it's very, very good.
Yes.
And they've all done a wonderful job, and with the money problems that we've had and the cuts we've had to make, I don't think you can tell the difference on the stage
at all.
Oh,
no, you can't. No, you can't.
It's just remarkable how these people are able to change their ways to make things affordable. We don't go over our budget by very much, and it's usually made up by the end of the year when we know that we will have an overage in expenses. During the year, we make it up by cuts and contributions.
And I know how difficult that is, because once the season's announced and cast, I mean, you're pretty committed,
you're stuck,
aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, very hard
Stuck sounds like trouble.
Yeah.
And we're not in trouble at all.
No, I don't get the impression that Actors is in trouble at all. I mean, the other arts are in varying degrees suffering, and some, as we know, are threatened with extinction. But Actors is the one which has always been kind of the banner holder, I think,
We've always been financially responsible.
Yes, yes.
And we plan several years ahead so that we know what's going to happen.
Yes. So what is this outcome? What would have you say on February 13th that this was a banner year for the African American Art Exhibition?
Well, I'd like to sell every one, because they're all very fine works and they're all by up-and-coming and very bright artists who need affirmation of their work.
Yes, all paintings, or is there a mixture?
Well, there are paintings. We have wonderful hats from a woman.
Oh, good.
Who makes hats. We have one interesting piece of sculpture that is of a woman's head and what goes on inside, and you can see through the glass. There are a lot of phenomenal, wonderful things there.
Yes. Well, I want to take this opportunity, Ryan, of saying that as an actor's fan and as a Louisville Arts aficionado, that I salute you for what is that now, getting on for 50 years service to Actors Theatre, and most especially to this African-American art exhibition.
Well, I'm very excited about it, and I'm also extremely proud of being able to do this for so long, and it's thanks to the support of Actors Theatre, Brown-Forman, and those members of our board over the years who have given us merit awards. They're very nice awards to receive because it really lets you know that someone likes your work.
Yes.
And someone wants to give you a prize.
Yes.
for sticking with your work.
Well, talk about sticking with your work, Rowan. You're an exemplar. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Thompson.
Hello, this is Thompson Smiley, continuing to discuss items which have cropped up in my monthly Louisville magazine column called Smiley's Picks. And my guest today, and I'm honoured to have him here, is Mark Masterson, who's the Artistic Director of Actors Theatre. Mark, may I editorialise for a start and say I think Actors Theatre has had one of the most triumphant years in the 30-odd years I've been attending.
Oh, well, thanks, Thompson. It's nice of you to say so.
Well, congratulations. I mean, it started on a terrific high with The Kite Runner, was maintained with a number of other pieces. I hear that Second City, which, alas, is drawing to a close, is on the same level, and that Ma Rainey has won you new fans.
It's terrific, and, you know, I'm grateful to say that we're packing them in, and, you know, Actors Theatre continues to grow, and it's thanks to this great audience in Louisville that supports our work.
Well, you know, it is a miracle because you go to Actors on a rainy Tuesday night when probably you'd rather be sitting by the fire, and the theatre's packed for a play that many of us hadn't heard of before we went to Actors. It really is a Louisville phenomenon.
And it's been going on a long time. And, you know, I think there are those who believe you're only as good as your audience. And I think the audience in Louisville has grown over decades to be quite a sophisticated and hungry theater audience. And it's a pleasure to program in Louisville, Kentucky, for that audience.
When you say hungry audience, you mean that just because the thing is new, they're not going to stay away in the droves?
They're ready for anything, I think. Yes. You know, within certain boundaries, I suppose. Yeah. But it's an intelligent audience that is ready for adventure, and that's what you want when you're putting things out on stage.
And it must make your job infinitely much more what's the word, worthwhile or whatever, because I know there's nothing more boring than running an opera company where you have to stick to the same Aida, Bohème and Carmen every night. Indeed, I always think the hardest thing about running a company after the first 5 or 7 years is coming up with new rabbits, bringing new sensations out of the hat on a regular basis. And I would imagine that Humana Festival for new plays offers just that kind of opportunity.
Well, just as an example, last year we had record attendance, about 38,000 tickets sold. And that in and of itself, in an age where familiarity is what sells most often, where people want to see what they think they already know.
Mm-hmm.
But to come to sell that many tickets in Louisville, Kentucky for a lineup of plays that nobody knows means that people understand what the brand is, that the Humana Festival is all about adventure. You're going to discover things. You're not going to like everything, but you will have an opportunity to see the thing before anybody else sees it that may become the next new major American work.
That's right. And comments how many of your plays have won Emmys or whatever, how many of your plays have won this, that, or next thing or run on Broadway are strictly irrelevant, aren't they? I mean, you propose and the public disposes.
Well, actually, we have very clear measures of success.
You have, and they're formidable.
Well, the measures of success include how many works transfer to New York or, you know, into the larger marketplace. But I think one of the things that's happened over the last few years is that the American theater has diversified, and so that there are more small and mid-sized theaters in the nation now than there are major theaters like Actors Theater. Mm-hmm. And they do different kinds of work than the larger institutions do. So our work, our goal, our primary singular goal is to have the work that we premiere produced elsewhere as many times as possible. And our track record is 85%. Over a 10-year period, 85% of the works that we premiere get multiple subsequent productions in theaters all over America and all over the world. So New York is part of that ecology, but it's not the only measure of success.
It's not the only measure. I mean, that's a phenomenal percentage, 85%, in an industry where many shows open and close on the same night.
Well, and I have to say that of the plays that haven't received second productions, many of them have been some of our most popular works here.
Really?
For example, At the Vanishing Point, which we did in Butchertown 5 or 6 years ago. Wild Blessings, a play based on Wendell Berry's writing, was the most popular high-ticket-selling show that we've done in the history of the Humana Festival. Hasn't had that second production yet, mm-hmm. but certainly spoke loud and clear to our audiences here. So those shows are important too. It's not, you know, it's not just a measure of.
No, it was in years past a major magnet for international press, and I think that's still the case, isn't it?
It is. I think last year we had 22 countries represented by foreign press.
Yes,
some of them
phenomenal.
On an official delegation through the State Department, and some of them who came on their own.
Really, and that's a phenomenal record. I mean, I know as a boy growing up in Britain, I knew about Louisville by the name of the Louisville Orchestra before mm-hmm. I knew, you know, that was in the days of the recordings and all that stuff. So similarly, I mean, Humana Festival, I think, has made Humana an international byword. You
right.
just have to say the Humana.
Right.
And it's that thing that marketers call, you know, give me a Kleenex or, you know, it's reached that status, which is a tremendous tribute. What's your own involvement, apart from the overall, of course? What is your own involvement in this festival? Are you directing?
This year I'm not directing, and I've only done that one other year. Mm-hmm. But we're a bit short-staffed right now, and so I decided that maybe I should do my job as artistic director and producer and, you know, guide these works forward as best I can, which is difficult to do when you're in a rehearsal hall for 8 hours
sure
a day.
Sure it is. Yep. I know you have a marvelous process with a dramaturgy department, which reads the plays and sifts them. Could you tell me something about the selection process, and particularly when you personally get involved?
Sure. We have one of the great literary departments in the United States theater. It's a full-time staff of 3, sometimes 4, which is why we're a bit short-staffed right now. And then 2 interns who are with us all year long. So there's really 5 or 6 people. And then I have my artistic team, Sean Daniels, the associate artistic director, Zan Sawyer Daly, who has been here for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and a number of other younger staff members who also contribute to the process. So the lit department reads out front of the pack, and they read about 700 or 800 submissions a year, and also manage those submissions, requesting scripts from mm-hmm. playwrights around the country. Then they select a finalist list, which is about 70, 80 scripts, maybe sometimes a little bit more than that. We may read 100. And the entire group reads the same 4 or 5 scripts every week, and then we have a meeting that's sort of like a book club where
yes.
we talk about what we've read and what we like and what we don't like and what challenged us. And that process has really been wonderful for the selection process because it's opened up different points of view and brought plays into the dialogue that I might have missed or that someone else might have missed. And those different points of view and that healthy debate that you get in a good book club
sure.
Is essentially the process that we use to move
Did you imply
forward.
That you read about 100 yourself?
I read about 100 new plays and sometimes more than that because I get things that are sent directly to me, you know, as well.
Uh-huh.
And then I read plays for season planning outside the Humana Festival as well. So I do read a lot of scripts in a
year.
I
bet you do. I'm not for a moment implying that you've got money to spend, but it is an advantage, isn't it, in a not-for-profit theatre? I mean, you're not strictly limited to the 3-person play with 1 kitchen set. I mean, you can be a little more expansive, shall we say, without being expensive.
It's true. However, I would say that reality is reality, and we have cut $1 million out of our budget over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We remain a completely under-resourced organization. We manage our way through. I'm not complaining about it. I understand that every business has had to make adjustments in this economy. But when you run as close to the bone as we do, to lose 12% or so, 10% of your operating costs, means that you really have to do things in a different way, and you have to pay attention to efficiency. And the average cast size for the Humana Festival is 5, and that hasn't changed in probably 20 years. Mm-hmm. The average cast size for the rest of the season has gone down mm-hmm. over the last several years in a manner of adjustment. And we've done other things to increase our capabilities by partnering with other theaters and sending, for example, Ma Rainey was going to go to Milwaukee and Kite Runner went to Cleveland. And, you know, these shows that we originate have mm-hmm. a life beyond our Louisville stage. Mm-hmm. That helps us to reduce our operating costs and bring some of the larger cast shows to our stages.
Mark, tell us about business. How do we get tickets?
You know, last year we started a Locals Pass offer, which gives people complete opportunity to see all of the plays over various weekends of the festival. It's $99. It's completely flexible, totally affordable. And it's a way to get a first look at spring. We're like the crocus that's popping up out of the ground on this cold and wintry day. So there's a lot of excitement in this. We're inviting our local audiences to participate, and they are participating in record numbers. So take advantage of being a Louisvillian yep. and come to Actors Theater to see the Humana Festival of New American Plays with a Locals Pass for
Excellent.
$99.
Well, Mark, I can only say as a fan that the 12% or whatever you said cut in expenses is certainly not reflected in the product, especially in this banner year. So thank you very much. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Smiley.
And have a happy festival.
Great. Thank you.